Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another edition of the Niner Noise Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. My name is Robert Morrison, a contributor at ninernoise.com, and here with me, as the Niners go marching on and on, Mr. Akshaz Devaduela. Akshaz, man, how are we doing?
Oh, man, we forgot a little bit what it's like to watch a intense, close football game. I thought the second quarter against Seattle was enough, but you know, the 49ers decided to make a whole game of it against the Cowboys. But good, you know, live to fight another week. So all's well that ends well.
Yeah, and ultimately that's the key, right? It's just like, as you've said, I think a couple of times over the last several weeks, it's just like, it doesn't matter really how you win, so long as you do. And I think that's a pretty good thing to keep in mind as you think about this game. 19-12 over the Dallas Cowboys at Levi's Stadium in the NFC divisional round, which lands the 49ers the right to go to Philadelphia and to play the NFC championship game there against the number one seeded Eagles in the NFC. This is the Niners' third NFC championship game in 4 years, which is just a wild, wild thing to think about. And Akshaz, on top of everything else, people wanted to fire Kyle Shanahan at one point earlier in this season, in spite of all of those things that have happened. And they were citing weird stats like, you know, at that point he had an under 500 record and blah, 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 blah. Completely losing sight of the fact that when he took over this team in 2017, that it was an absolute dumpster fire. And just what he has been able to do over the course of his time, and the fact that every year that he's had a relatively healthy team, he's taken them to at least the NFC championship game, I think says a lot about what he has done and about what this organization has done to steady the footing of the whole team, the whole organization. I think it's pretty incredible. So no matter what happens from here on out, I think you just got to go, wow, like what they've done is amazing.
Shanahan right now, I think, in the storied history of the 49ers, is probably the third best coach in franchise history. And if he can wrap up this string, which really we shouldn't say will be ending anytime soon, given how well they've kind of set up their team and are able to like restock with elite talent. If he can get a Super Bowl in this stretch, at least one, he's already one of the like few coaches in the league that I would say if he gets fired from any position and he's on the market, you get rid of anyone other than maybe Andy Reid and get him in your building, because he knows how to do football basically. And you know, it's not just his like offensive mind that's so incredible. Obviously, that's one of the huge pluses with keeping Shanahan. But the defensive culture, the overall team culture, the ability to just take a punch to the gut and punch right back, the physical nature of the 49ers, that all springs from the head coach. There's a reason why, you know, when Robert Saleh left to go to the Jets, people were a little concerned that the defense would fall off. There's a reason why D'Amico Ryans has been able to step in and do as much as he's done. It's because D'Amico's an exceptional coach in his own right, but it's also because Shanahan has instilled a culture that allows his staff and his players to just exceed. So you're absolutely right. I think people get caught up in the moment, and whether or not Shanahan has the right approach to developing Trey Lance, I don't know. I don't really care right now, given how the season is going. But you can't, like, to want to fire a coach like him after, like, last year, but then especially after this year, I mean, he's special. The 49ers got a good one. And when you have a good coach, you know, you can get a lot of things wrong and still be right in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's absolutely right. And it's so weird for a team that's been around for as long as they've been to already be talking about how he's the third best coach in the franchise's history. Actually, that begs a slight question, because the first one is pretty obvious. Who's the second one in your mind? Just out of curiosity, I know this is a complete tangent, but just I have an idea, but I'm just wondering who you would put in that spot at this particular moment.
As of right now, I'd put Seifert, just because.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I mean, I wasn't alive for basically that whole transition, but. You win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You're pretty, but it's close, right? I think if Shanahan gets one, he goes to number two in my view.
Yeah, yeah. Because I mean, the argument on George Seifert has always been, well, yeah, but he inherited Bill Walsh's team like right off the bat and didn't. I mean, he had some ups and downs post that immediate moment when he took over initially. But yeah, I mean, I think there's certainly something there, but I think that's correct. I was just curious as to what you were going to go with, just given your where you are in your timeline. I mean, there's not really a whole lot of other options at that point. I mean, probably Mariucci's on that list, right? Like maybe he's like a very distant fourth at this point. Gosh, no, it's really sad. The state of things outside of that group, and then you have like a hodgepodge of other names here and there, but yeah, anyway, that's a tangential kind of moment there. But yeah, Dallas, you know, that is an organization that has figured out how to win the regular season quite frequently over the last several years, or to be highly successful over the course of the regular season for a long time. And I mean, they had a little tiny stretch where they struggled and then didn't make the playoffs, but it seems like they've been like in contention for playoff spots for the most part over the last decade plus or so. And it's just every time something happens, and I don't feel really bad for them or anything. It's just sort of a strange state to be in for sure. And we'll talk more about this game in particular. The one thing that struck me about it in a sort of general sense as we kind of get into it, is that we were both terribly wrong about how high scoring this game was going to be. That was what I kept thinking about. I was like, oh, nobody's going to score any points today, is it? It became pretty clear pretty early on that was not going to be the case. So I was wondering, in just sort of a general sense, what your thoughts on this question were. Do you think... not to get ahead of ourselves, but the Niners could have two more games, right, on this for the season, the NFC Championship game and potentially a Super Bowl if they can get through that. Do you think this is the type of games that they're probably going to have to win throughout the rest of the run if they want to win the whole thing? Because I don't know. I'm not. Or do you think there's a chance that the offense will have a chance to show up and put up a lot of points again? Because we were kind of talking about this a little before. This is a rough go of it to get to that point. I'm just kind of curious if you think this game might be indicative of where it might be headed.
It's interesting because it's so matchup specific. And I think of all the teams in the NFL, Dallas is probably the most like capable of stopping the 49ers just because Dan Quinn was probably the most aware of what Shanahan wanted to do. And I also think Dallas's like relative strength on defense, being a pretty like fast and aggressive linebacking core, along with a pretty solid pass rush, really gave the 49ers fits. But, you know, not to take anything away from Dallas, I think their defense played really well, and the 49ers had to earn everything. they're basically, the Niners were like one Brock Purdy throw on that first short field. And this game is like 23 as opposed to 19. And then from there, another like 30 small miscues that Dallas caused, but also I think Purdy kind of walked into himself. And this game could have swung very differently. Of course, it could have gone the other way as well. So I don't know. I think the NFC Championship game could be a lot more like this game, because I think Philly, I think if you had to tell me what the three best defenses in the NFL were, I would put, or at least in the top five, I think Philly, Dallas, and the 49ers are in that top five for sure. And Philly's defense is incredibly talented and incredibly good at rushing the passer and defending the pass. They're not so good against the run, and I think that's where the 49ers had their biggest issues, was Dallas's defense was crowding the box and was able to take advantage of some poor run blocking, some missed opportunities to break big ones. But eventually, you know, the running lanes opened up to run around your question for probably like 45 seconds.
You're good.
I think next week, if the 49ers win next week, it'll be low scoring. And we'll talk about it more when we get into the Philly preview episode. But I think the Super Bowl has the chance to be more offensively minded, just because I don't think the AFC has the same caliber of defense as what the 49ers face. I think the Bengals defense is quite good as well, but it won't be anything like Dallas or Philly.
Right. Yeah. I think that's fair. And kind of what I was thinking too, which is sort of, you know, it's good to kind of get a gauge of where we are at this particular point. All right. One last question. This one's a little bit more fun, before we get into post-game injuries and then get into the meat of the post-game stuff. Did the Cowboys outdo last year's ending with this very interesting play to close out this particular game on Sunday?
Oh, man. I'm going to say yes, because last year's play was really stupid, but I understand it in theory, right? And if they know the rules better, it works, right? I mean, was it the right call? I don't think so, but you get like 25 yards on a scramble. If your center and QB know that you have to give the ball to the lineman before you can snap it, you get a second, you have a shot at the end zone. Right. But that last play from Dallas and that last drive from Dallas was probably the most hilarious drive of playoff football I've seen in a while. You have Armstead smacking into Prescott, but not wrapping up because he's worried about getting a roughing the passer. Then you have,
so the NFL in 2023, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Then you have Dalton Schultz being pushed backwards and walking sideways so the clock runs. That kills 20 seconds. Then you have him somehow almost like galloping into a catch where he puts his second foot out of bounds, so it's incomplete. And then you have what like was ridiculously like stupid. Like, in theory, you know, no offensive linemen get a quick lateral, and then you have just 11 guys who can, like, run the ball. Okay, I get it. Sure, that's an option. But they had, like, four offensive linemen on the field.
They were just taking up space.
They didn't trigger on the snap. The only guy who moved forward was Turpin. Zeke gave a good snap, but for all you know, he could have chucked that, like, way over everyone. And, I mean,
Aziz Alshire was having none of it, though.
I mean, just imagine that they spent real time in practice.
I hope not too much time.
Hey, here's what we do. Like, I didn't, half the players didn't even move. Jimmy Ward had a free line. I don't know.
Yeah, that and the funniest part was I think it was Tim Kawakami who pointed out on Twitter later that one of their offensive linemen was too far downfield, so the play probably wouldn't have mattered anyway because they would have called a penalty and the game would have been over no matter what it would have happened. So that would have been hilarious too. My favorite part about it, however, all those things that you point out are absolutely true. I also thought it was funny that I think Bosa got like suplexed in the end zone. So they very well could have just called a holding penalty in the end zone in the safety and the game was over at that point too, which would have been almost as hilarious, but not quite. But I got to say my favorite part is that they ran this formation out, right? And they were kind of in where they needed to be because they just stopped the clock, right? And everybody can see what's happening. Everybody's looking at it. Like the commentators are like, okay, this is weird. Like what's going on? Greg Olson's like losing his mind. And the Niners call a timeout because they're like, oh, this is weird. Like, let's talk about this. And then they ran out there and did the same thing. It's like, you don't have a backup for your dumb idea when you've already shown what you're going to do. Like, it was pretty funny. That was my favorite part of the whole thing. It's just like, there's no second idea here. Like, you're going to show it and then just immediately, I mean, it was dead on arrival anyway, but just like, of all the things, that one made me laugh the most when they just came out. It's just like, okay, whatever. Like, I don't know that you had much of a shot anyway. There was only 6 seconds left. It was pretty much done at that point. As soon as Dalton Schultz didn't make that catch down the field, they didn't have a hope or in a prayer. And it was funny. And also like a nice moment of levity and breath. And it's like, ah, okay, game's over. We're good.
Oh yeah. I mean, Just awful. Just hilariously bad. But I will just say one quick thing about this week that I found kind of interesting so far is I spent a little bit of time basically just like perusing the post-game content. Because, you know, when your team wins, you kind of want to kind of revel in it. I haven't seen a single like article that can or like podcast or a YouTube clip that's like, here's what the 49ers did well. So I just think it's interesting how in a game where the 49ers win 19-12, the entire discussion is just, here's what the Cowboys did wrong to lose the game. So just an interesting kind of framing of it. Yeah. It kind of goes with the territory of being not the Cowboys, but yeah. Still.
Yeah, I saw a couple of things about that, too. I was just caught a glimpse of, I was out somewhere earlier this evening and they had, I guess it was a rerun of pardon the interruption on ESPN from this afternoon. And the first question was, did the 49ers win or did Dallas lose? And it's just like, why are we even asking that question? Like, if this had happened the other way around, we wouldn't be having this conversation even at all. So, it's like, okay, whatever. Apparently Stephen A. Smith was hilarious today. Just cause he just, I don't like to mess with, like, he does nothing for me most of the time. I'm just like, okay, dude, calm down. But yeah, his dislike of the Cowboys is just top notch. So, good for him. All right. Enough of that. Let's talk about the injury situation. Not too bad. Again, looks to be pretty good, shape for the most part. The biggest news that comes out of the game that wasn't really related to the game, but is news, I guess, for the most part, is that it's seeming pretty likely that the only way we're going to see Jimmy Garoppolo again in a 49ers jersey is if they get to the Super Bowl, because those extra 2 weeks will give him a chance to maybe be available as the backup quarterback for that particular game. But at this particular point, they are going to do some more x-rays this week, but the likelihood is that he will not have enough time to get up to speed, even if he's cleared, that he would not be ready to be the backup quarterback for the NFC Championship game. So it's another week of Josh Johnson as QB2. I don't know. That didn't seem like terribly surprising news to me. This was always like the NFC Championship game was always like I think that's the early part of the original window, or maybe like just the tail end of it or in the middle or something like that. It always seemed pretty ambitious to me. So we'll see. I mean, again, we talked about this already. It certainly would be nice to have a guy back there who's been there before and you feel a little bit more comfortable with, but hopefully it's a non-issue. And then as far as actual playing people who played in the game against Dallas, Charles Omenihu is day-to-day with an oblique strain. Christian McCaffrey day-to-day with a calf contusion. You could see him messing around with it throughout the game. The commentators were talking about it. He was towards the end of the game, he was really only coming in for passing downs and third downs late in the game. And then Elijah Mitchell, also day-to-day with a groin injury. But Shanahan didn't seem to be too terribly concerned about any of them. Obviously, that particular trio would be a bad miss if they were long-term injuries. But again, at this point in the season, pretty much everybody knows what they need to do as far as a physical point of view. You know, you take care of yourself and get ready to go. But I imagine a lot of this is mental work at this point. You know, like keep yourself safe, keep yourself healthy, and just kind of mentally prepare for the week. And so I'm not terribly concerned. I think Omenihu is an interesting name here because I think the defensive line kind of lost a little bit when he went out of the game. He was such a massive part of that, of the Cowboys game last year. And I think having him opposite Bosa is, at this point, I think he's their most efficient pass rusher opposite of Nick Bosa. And then really the other thing that he allows them to do is to rotate Bosa out a little bit and not feel like, I mean, obviously you're losing something because it's Nick Bosa to anybody else is probably going to be a loss, but I think he provides them as that a good second level and also a good opposite kind of player for him as well.
Yeah, this we can get so a little bit of self-promotion. If you haven't already, be sure to check out my post-game grades on NinerNoise.com where I discuss some of my thoughts about the game itself. But to kind of steal from myself, I thought the defensive line had a little more trouble getting pressure than we saw last year. And I think part of that definitely had to do with Omenihu just not being 100% the entire way through. I mean, the 49ers, a lot of the way their pressure works so well is that everyone is always fresh and ready to go. And whenever you lose pieces from the constant rotation, it means everyone's a little more tired, means you have to make some tough decisions. And yeah, it would be a big miss too, especially because he's able to slot inside as well and just give the defense different looks. But luckily, not too serious. And they'll need all the pass rushers they can get against Philly in that offensive line.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Cool. Yeah, everybody check out Aksha's grades from the game from yesterday, and then we'll talk more about that and other things that you can look at on the site as well. But let's go ahead and move into the things we liked and the things we didn't like. This feels like a pretty obvious. Oftentimes, I feel like these things we like, things we didn't like, tend to go in very obvious directions, but we'll see how this goes. So, Akshaz, I'll start with you, sir. What did you like about this game from Sunday?
I'm going to use this point in the podcast to, I mean, obviously, I like the defense. I thought the defense came to play, and I thought it was a big deal that beyond basically one drive, they were pretty locked down the entire way through, and it really allowed the 49ers to work through their own offensive issues and eventually gain that rhythm in the third quarter and second half. But more specifically, I really, really, really liked Fred Warner. I've talked about this a little bit before, about just how incredible he is and how he transcends what it means to be like a good middle linebacker and to be just like a great player. Because sometimes we give monikers like that to players, and it's just not good enough. But Fred Warner single-handedly more than probably anyone, including Bosa, on the defense, changes the way the 49ers can play defense. And it basically allows them to disguise and rush and do so many beautiful blitzes, because he might be the only middle linebacker in the league that is completely capable of carrying three, so the slot-most receiver, just up the middle of the field. What he did, so the play everyone is talking about, and rightfully so, is against CeeDee Lamb, where third down, Warner is in the A-gap, mugging up for, it's a blitz look, and it's a disguise that only works because Warner pulls off, and he's basically, they're running a Tampa 2 type coverage, which means he has the middle, basically the entire middle of the field. And the only reason this blitz disguise works is because Warner is able, as a linebacker, to completely sprint up the middle of the field and take a play on the ball against the throw to CeeDee Lamb. Any other linebacker in the NFL, that's a completion, that's a pass interference, or frankly, that's some other horrible play, or that play never gets called because you would never put your player in such a position. But Fred Warner, he lets you do things like that. He had his interception, which was a huge deal, you know, for him to get his hands on the ball. Game-changing play, with a shout-out, of course, to Jimmy Ward for his nickel coverage there. But just in general, what a great player. I mean, the 49ers have built such a loaded roster top to bottom that sometimes really good players get lost in the shuffle of, oh, yeah, like, we have really great players everywhere. But he is one of one in the NFL. And to have been able to watch Patrick Willis, then Navarro Bowman, and then Warner, it's absolutely a privilege because he's definitely up them with those names in terms of linebacker play.
Yeah, 100% agree with you. Was going to say a lot of the same things, not quite as well as you did, but just numerically, the game looks really impressive from a numbers point of view for him. Obviously, he had the interception, 9 total tackles, one for a loss, one other additional pass defense. But then just doing the things that as you said, nobody else would ask their middle linebacker to do because they just couldn't do it. And it's just impressive. And the fact that he allows somebody like a Dre Greenlaw to be the linebacker beside him. You know, we talk about Greenlaw a lot, and obviously he had a kind of weird game, you know, up and down, you know, making plays, but also had that sort of boneheaded play towards the end of the half that ended up not going particularly well for him in that particular case. But he is allowed to be as free as he is, I think, in large part because Fred Warner is so good. And, you know, obviously Greenlaw has responsibilities and things that he needs to do, but his ability to fly around is in part because Warner does what he does. And so I think that's really, I think that's vital to this defense doing what it does. for me, I'm going to stay on the defense side of the ball. You know, I think the pass defense in general is worth pointing out. I think they did. I mean, obviously this may be redundant at this point, but the defense was spectacular on Sunday and really kept them in the game as you said, when the offense was sort of struggling to find its footing. But I think it's worth pointing out, in particular, the three cornerbacks, D'Amador Lenore, Jimmy Ward, who you mentioned, and Tarvarius Ward, each of whom played well. You know, there were some moments where each of them kind of picked on a little bit. You know, you think of that long pass to CeeDee Lamb early, you know, that looked like it was going to be a game changer early in the second half. Ended up not being that big of a deal, right? I truly, truly hate that. It didn't matter, obviously, because Lamb made that spectacular catch. But I truly hate that the quarterback underthrowing a football gets a defender a penalty every time. Just beyond, it doesn't make any sense. Like, that guy did something bad, but he, I don't, whatever. If the offensive player has to run through you to get to the ball, it shouldn't be, you shouldn't be penalized for it, but that's neither here nor there. Obviously, Lenore made a great play on his interception. I have no idea what Dak saw or thought he was going to get there, but Michael Gallup made absolutely no attempts. He just kind of like brushed him aside and was like, I will take this from you now. So he played well. You mentioned Jimmy Ward. He played spectacularly, I think, as the nickel quarterback, because he was asked to do a lot with CeeDee Lamb as well, because they move him around all over the place and spend a lot of time in the nickel position. And obviously that second interception that you noted, his instincts and his ability on the ball really made that play happen. Again, not really sure what Dak is doing there or what he saw, but just fine work there. And then Tre'Davious Ward, who just, they kind of just ignored for most of the game. I think part of that is, frankly, Dallas doesn't have a receiving core that requires you to pay that much attention to the rest of the group outside of Lamb. And so it looked like they were picking on Ward and or Jimmy Ward and Lenore more in that particular case, because they would isolate those two with CeeDee Lamb. But frankly, I think that the Tre'Davious Ward has earned the right to be that sort of, you know what? We're not going to mess with him too terribly much. We're just not going to do it. And so kudos to the defenders, especially the cornerbacks in this particular case, for holding things down against an offense that has shown itself pretty capable through most of the season.
Absolutely. I think the secondary's coverage itself is really, really interesting, because I totally agree. They took care of business with the exception of the one pass to Lamb. But at the same time, I was a little interested by the decision for the most part, especially for Mooney Ward, to kind of play soft just the entire game. I'm not sure if it's a speed issue or if that's what they were coaching them up to do against Dallas, but there are a lot of free yards if you play like 5 yards off on the 3rd and 4. So something to keep in mind for sure, but definitely I think Jimmy Ward especially should get a lot of credit for how he's been playing at nickel corner, a position that, you know, he's really excelled in despite it not being his natural position. He's allowed the 49ers to keep a playmaker on the field and allow Tashaun Gibson to still play as well as he has. And there's a whole interesting conversation to be made about how the secondary will look next year, but totally agree. I think, you know, like you said, Dallas beyond CeeDee Lamb doesn't really have a good receiving threat, but, you know, it doesn't matter how many yards a receiver gets. All that matters is that you stop him when it counts and you walk out with a win.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Akshaz, we'll go to the thing you didn't like. We'll start with you.
So if you read my grades, I was pretty critical of the team. This was mostly just a spur of the moment kind of reaction, and I will be very much less critical on the show because I've thought about it a little more. But I will say in general, I wasn't particularly impressed with the offensive line. And I think the offensive line, I think the trenches were the big issue to me. So I'll say that broadly and then talk a little more specifically about what I mean. I think first, defensively, they did a good job against the run for the most part. Pollard was able to get a few little chunk plays, but nothing too crazy. And then obviously, Ezekiel Elliott just doesn't have the juice that Tony Pollard had. So when Pollard was injured, they were able to close things up quite efficiently. But, you know, there wasn't a lot of pressure in Dak Prescott's face. Pressure came when it mattered near the end with that sack on Dallas's second to last possession. Pressure might have been the reason why Prescott threw that ridiculous pass that Lenore was able to intercept. But it was a pretty clean pocket for Prescott. And it's only going to get harder because Philadelphia has probably the best offensive line in the league. And they have some real studs anchoring real important positions. So it's going to be a huge deal for the 49ers to be able to get pressure and maintain lane integrity. That way Jalen Hurts can't escape. So that was a little concerning to me. Offensively, I think the trenches were a big issue, and part of it makes sense. Dallas is one of the two best defensive lines the 49ers faced all year, the other one being Washington. And then the next elite defensive line they'll face will be next week in Philadelphia. But it wasn't just Dallas getting pressure and disrupting Purdy. I think Purdy played into the issues with pressure too. He flushed himself out a lot. He rolled to his left more than he needed to. I just think there wasn't really a way to move people in the run game, get the blocks set up, really get rushing lanes. And it took essentially continually beating on the Cowboys with just run after run and tiring them out until the offensive line was able to really start paving the way. And that was able to work because the 49ers defense was putting on a masterclass on the other side. But you're not always going to have that luxury where your defense is shutting down another offense and you can like go through a half and like half a quarter without being able to really get any traction in the trenches. So that was, I think, the biggest concern to me was just the 49ers got a little manhandled up front and they eventually turned it on, but need that switch to flip a little sooner next week.
Excuse me. Yeah, I was going to say not exactly the same thing, but kind of staying in the same vein. And that was just the running game in the first half was clearly not working. They ran the ball 11 times in the first half for 27 yards, which is 2.5 yards per carry. That's not good at all. Now, again, they were able to get things done in the passing game and they did enough offensively. Obviously, they were up 9-6 at halftime, which is, you know, weird. I was like, you know, I made the very intuitive and joke, the very funny joke that no one has ever made. I was like, oh, it's the Rangers against the Giants here on Sunday night football. But no, that's not funny at all. But they struggled to get the running game going. And I think obviously part of it is that's one of Dallas's strengths is stopping the run and has been throughout most of the season, with the exception of a couple of blips. And then obviously with a rookie quarterback, they were keying in on like, let's make sure we stop the run to force Brock Purdy to have to make plays. And for the most part, it worked in the first half. And then, as you noted, as they began to wear down and as Kyle Shanahan said, you know, and I'm not giving up on this, we're going to run the ball more and we're going to run the ball more efficiently in the second half. And they broke off a couple of bigger runs and, eventually, it just got to the point where they were able to, I don't know if they figured out some of the blocking schemes a little better or what, but the second half was a lot better. They ran the ball 21 times for 86 yards in the second half, which is up to 4.1 yards per carry. All in all, averages out to not where you want to be. It's something like 3.5 yards per carry, I think, isn't where the averages kind of hit a total across the board. It would get the job done, but it wouldn't get the job done very efficiently in the long run. So certainly something to watch out for as we head into the Philly game. But right there with you, that was certainly a concern. And you, because, you know, as poised as Brock Purdy has been and as efficient as he has been at times, you don't want to put the whole game on his shoulders. And so it's really important that the rest of the skill position players are able to do that. And obviously he got some help from other players as the game went on. George Kittle had a great game, and it'll be interesting to see what they do in Philadelphia. And obviously, we'll talk about this more later in the week. But it is certainly something to pay attention to, because as you said, they're going to have to get the running game going a little bit better as we head into that game coming up next Sunday.
I will say, though, something you just said is what makes the 49ers so difficult to defend is, you know, the running game wasn't going. Brandon Ayuk was, for the most part, shut out. Deebo Samuel wasn't able to get anything going. All these things went right for Dallas. They effectively stopped almost every single weapon, but they couldn't stop every weapon. And George Kittle has almost 100 yards and really sparks the offense. It just speaks to the talent the 49ers have now, where you can do almost everything right and you'll still end up losing because there's just one player you weren't able to take care of.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. And obviously that just crazy catch that Kittle made, where I think he said he wasn't even technically in the play, right? He was just blocking. And then he just kind of leaked out and Brock found him and he threw the ball and bounced off his hands, bounced off his face, bounced off his hands again, and he caught it and somehow still managed to sort of duck under, what was it, Diggs, that kind of flew at him, and he was just loving his life there. That was the spark of the offense. As soon as he made that catch, I don't know about you, but I was like, okay, now we're doing, now we got something going. And obviously they scored a touchdown on that drive, and that was the difference right there. That immediate moment, and the Dallas was, they were stopping everything, they were doing everything they could, they were, you know, holding pretty much everybody in check, and then one little moment of brilliance on essentially a broken play by George Kittle, who was having more fun than any human being should be allowed to have while doing anything, and that broke the game open, and that was it. From there, it just felt like, okay, we're good. Like that, I mean, that made the game, what, 16-9 or something like that. But at that point, you're just kind of feeling like, I don't know about you, but I didn't feel like Dallas had the juice at that particular point to come back and actually win the game.
I think for me, it was when Dallas could only muster 3 on their next drive. That was when I was like, okay, I think this is where it ends. Obviously, I was still stressed out the entire time, but I think right. that's when I was like, oh wow, this might be it, because you just got the sense that Dallas's defense had, like, the 49ers had, like, gotten over the hump against Dallas's defense, and that at a certain point they'd just been worn down. So even though there might have been a bad play here or a bad play there, or a negative yards here, or only 1 yard and a rush there, Dallas just, like you said, they just didn't have the juice at a certain point.
Yeah. Well, and even the fact that the Niners followed it up by just getting another field goal themselves, because obviously the scoring a touchdown on that last drive would have killed the game altogether. But even getting it to 19 and back up to a touchdown with relatively little time, actually, that was their second lap drive, because they got the ball back and punted it, which led to the final Dallas drive. At that point, you're like, okay, you know, all they have to do is run the ball out at this point. Obviously, they made that more difficult than it needed to be as well, because of Elijah Mitchell's minor brain fart. That was so frustrating. And I was frustrated about it, but I also understood that I don't know how much he could, because, like, he took the path that he took was so wide that I'm not really sure what he would have been able to do. It would have been quite the tricky, you know, bending of the body in order to maintain, to get the first down still and maintain himself in bounds. So I get it, but it's also like, come on, guy, you gotta know what to do right there. That was a little more fun than it needed to be, for sure.
Oh yeah, I mean, we didn't even talk about that until now. I was mad, because that was one of those things where you ended the game, basically. And I agree, it would have been a tough way to go. He would have had to basically slide, and that would have been difficult. So I can understand why, you know, it didn't happen. I think the reason why I was a little more frustrated with it is because it felt like he was running the sideline, and it never occurred to him to, instead of giving himself up, just like veer left a little bit and, you know, maybe take on contact, but just give yourself space to be tackled inbounds. Mm-hmm. It his path definitely took him to the sideline, but then it kind of felt like he was running.
Yeah. Like he was like, I'm going to win the game right now because I'm going to score. And then he didn't have that much room, kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. But
yeah, it's all right, Elijah. We still like you, man. Good job. I mean, it was a great run. It just, the timing of it was just really bad. That's all.
Oh yeah, they the seas parted and he rushed right through.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful stuff. He's good. He's good. I'm glad he's on our team. Anyway, any final thoughts about this one? Obviously, we'll get into the Philadelphia of it all and all that stuff when we get into the post or the preview pod. But any final thoughts on this before we wrap things up?
I will very much say what I've been saying. I just think, you know, there's something so poetically wonderful about ending the Seahawks season, then ending the Cowboys season. Just there's a lot of like vindication in what the 49ers are doing. But I will also say Philadelphia is going to be a real, this is going to be, if we weren't fans of the 49ers, we just wanted to see like the best football game of the year. I think this is the one. This is going to be best on best, strength on strength. Arguably the top two rosters in the NFL. Definitely the top two rosters in the NFL if you take quarterbacks out of consideration. So we'll get more into it later in the week, but this is going to be one for the ages for sure.
Yeah, well said. As always, good thoughts from Akshaz as we close things out. And until then, until we get to the preview pod, thanks for listening to this episode of the Niner Noise Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. Please continue to check out ninernoise.com for all your latest 49ers news and analysis. Go ahead and check out Akshaz's grades from the divisional win over the Cowboys. And be sure to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. And of course, share it with all your fellow 49er fan friends. So until next time, let's sound the horn, 49ers.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.